Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview. So just to get us started, can you introduce yourself and give us a sense of your expertise when it comes to sight and visuals?
Sure. So my name is Hassan Valley and I'm an associate professor in epidemiology at La Trobe University. And look, I guess my expertise in this area is the fact that I'm an epidemiologist, and you know, that involves dealing with health data, and I'm particularly interested in communicating health data. And you know, one of the best ways of doing that, both within the scientific community but also outside of it, or particularly outside of it, is through the use of visualization. So you know, I've had an interest in science communication for a while, and you know, I'm interested in the way that you can communicate health data, and particularly risk data, through visualizations.
And can you tell us why visuals are so important to being able to communicate the science? Like, what is it about visual information?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, you know, the way visuals work is they access a different part of the brain than sort of when you give people raw numbers or sort of very traditional graphs. And so, you know, the goal with visualizations is to make the data and the interpretation of the data accessible to everyone, even if they don't have those mathematical skills or that sort of science background. So, you know, I think it is really difficult for humans to understand quantitative information, and particularly risk information, and so visuals are a way to make that information accessible and comprehensible to everyone.
And I mean, is this something in your experience trying to communicate, you know, your work? Have you always been focused on the visual elements of communication, or is this something that during the pandemic you've thought, oh no, I really need to kind of do that more now?
I probably actually started a couple of years before the pandemic. I've just, I guess, in the last 4 or 5 years become really interested and really motivated to communicate to the public about health issues. And, you know, in getting interested in science communication, I think you're interested in the best ways of getting information to the public and the best way of explaining issues. And, you know, that old cliche that a picture is worth a thousand words, I think, you know, is even more apt when it comes to science. So I think it's been a bit of an evolution over the last 5 years or so that I've really started to think deeply about how to use figures and use graphics and visualizations to help people understand health issues.
I mean, can you give us some examples of where you've used graphics during the pandemic to communicate different things?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the most recent one, perhaps, I feel like, is one of my most important ways or important examples of when I've done this, and that is, you know, one of the biggest controversies at the moment and the biggest sources of anxiety and misunderstanding is how safe the vaccines are, and particularly how safe the AstraZeneca vaccine is and what people's risk are of thrombosis with thrombocytopenia. And you know, this is an area that sort of intersects with lots of interests of mine. So, you know, particularly about risk perception and the way that our brains find it really difficult to make sense of really small risks. And one of the best ways of bypassing some of these cognitive biases that we have is to compare the risks of thrombosis with thrombocytopenia, TTS, with other risks that we are exposed to during the day. And if you can do that, then you can truly understand the magnitude of the risk of TTS, which is incredibly small. And, you know, hopefully you'll be less anxious and you will make a good decision about actually getting the vaccine if you're eligible for it. So, you know, I've published an article in The Conversation fairly recently where I, graphed the risk of different activities that we may indulge in and how that compares with the risk of TTS. And I think people had talked about it a lot, but just in this case, it was a very simple graph. But as soon as you start to see these risks sort of next to each other in an actual graph rather than just numbers or people talking about them, I think it has an immediate impact, and it's accessible to everyone. So that's probably one of the more recent examples. And it ended up really being a very simple bar graph that I think has had quite a significant impact.
And I can imagine that would really have very real world impacts on people deciding about taking the vaccine, because it is, as you said, so difficult to know like how to conceptualize those risks. And the whole pandemic is really just so overwhelming in terms of trying to weigh up risks, isn't it, in general? Like you kind of have risk fatigue or something where you're like, how risky is it for me to go to the shops right now? Or how risky is it to, you know, when we're not locked down, like go and see friends, you know, if we're allowed to, but, you know, is it a risk? So I feel like there's a lot of risk issues going on for people. And so when you're confronted with something like the AZ issue, it's like, how do I assess this?
Yeah, I think, we're in an environment that has huge fear, huge uncertainty. And people are grappling with issues that are actually quite complex. And whilst in one sense it's very easy, there's a virus that's infecting people, there are so many different issues that people have to consider. And then a lot of people might just feel like they've got their head around a particular issue, and then it changes, you know, and we're seeing that with the Delta variant of the SARS-CoV-2 virus right now. So, you know, in that context, it is really important to try and communicate, information really clearly, and perhaps equally importantly, to communicate the uncertainty around the information, to sort of prepare people for the fact that things may change. I think it is a really important environment for utilizing different ways of communicating health information, and visualizations are a really important part of that.
And I mean, it seems like the last, decade or so, there's been these real issues around trusting in science and trusting in this kind of official information. And I mean, to what extent do you think those visual and science communication campaigns can kind of cut through that mistrust?
Let's see. I mean, I think I'm not sure if the visuals themselves can cut through mistrust, because I think that's a bigger issue. But I think when scientists communicate really clearly in an accessible way, and their messages come across really clearly, I think that gives people confidence, and that's what a good visualization can do. And I think a really good example of that is, I think it's probably going to go down in history as one of the most important graphs and visualizations, in our modern world. And that is when we started on this pandemic and we were trying to explain what suppression was, and we were talking about flattening the curve, and those beautiful pictures of the curve being flattened, were disseminated, everywhere, basically. It immediately communicated to people what we were aiming to do and the impact of what we were doing, and more importantly, the impact if we didn't do anything. And I think that was that got everyone on board because it communicated that concept really clearly and was a brilliant visualization.
That's so true. I mean, I even you talking about it now, I get this kind of like weird memory of learning that and how it changed my understanding, because I had been really at the beginning of the pandemic, like before we locked down, very blasé about how serious it was, I guess, or something like that. There was some attitude I had that I was like, oh, it'll be fine. And then, you know, when we started to get that kind of information, it was like, oh, okay, this is why we're doing it. And it's that information, particularly about, you know, preventing hospitalizations, I think that was really, really crucial as well. Like that this isn't about you. This is about like the population, which, you know, has been really effective, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, that figure was, or visualization was, just so amazing in its simplicity, I guess, and its ability to be interpreted and, you know, to communicate many different things, including, as you mentioned, you know, how many people might sort of flood the hospital system and where that level, you know, is that hospital system would be overwhelmed. And it, you know, it was just, I still marvel at how one person's visualization of something so simple can be so impactful. And, you know, I do think it's a brilliant bit of science communication.
I mean, one of the things we're facing now, it seems, is that the way that the virus is unfolding in different parts of the world is very uneven, and it's very much related to access to vaccines and other issues like that. But yet we're all kind of dealing with the virus in this very localized spaces. Do you think there's a need for kind of communication around thinking globally about this?
Yeah, look, I think there is. I mean, I think, you know, we're starting to see, as we travel through this pandemic, the fact that until we get the pandemic dealt with in all areas of the globe, we haven't really, you know, we're not going to see the end of COVID-19. And so, you know, as some countries start to feel like they're emerging from the pandemic, they're going to see the fact that they can only go so far because they're always going to be at risk of the virus being imported. And of course, you know, if you have a raging epidemic in some developing countries or low and middle income countries, that impacts on us as well in the developed world. So, you know, I think, you know, we do have to convey that message to both the public and to politicians and policymakers, so that they truly understand and put effort into treating this as a global problem, not just a local problem.
I mean, how has it been for you as well in your work, given the kind of changing nature of what's going on, like, you know, changing advice and changing variants now that act differently? Has it just been really difficult and exhausting to kind of keep up with, like, oh, what advice should I be giving to these policymakers and politicians and so on?
Can I just say yes? That's the answer, really. Yeah. I mean, it's been extraordinary. It's, you know, it's going on 18 months now, I guess, of pretty much the amount of information that you have to be across, and the way it's constantly changing has been like nothing else I've ever had to deal with in my professional career. So, you know, and then there's, if you've sort of taken on a, I guess, a role of communicating with the public, you know, it presents all sorts of challenges in how you communicate information and communicate information that is imperfect. And that's the problem with a pandemic. This is not like you can go away and do 3 years of research and come up with a definitive answer which informs what you do. We're making decisions on the run, and we're making decisions based on really sketchy sort of data and really imperfect data. And then sometimes we have to change our, you know, change what we do because the information changes. So, you know, it's been a very interesting experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, epidemiologists are really on the map now, I feel like. You know, there's a lot more, there's an epidemiologist kind of on the news every night, and they're kind of, there's an understanding of the profession now, I think, that there maybe wasn't before. But I mean, is that something you ever expected in your career? Like, did you think, oh, well, one day a pandemic might happen and, you know, I'll have to deal with that? Or has that just been a totally shocking thing?
No, look, you'd be surprised to know. So I started as a research scientist in the lab, and then moved into public health, and then moved into what's called applied epidemiology, which is all about dealing with epidemics and pandemics. And you know, in that field, we've been predicting this for maybe the last 20 years or so. And you know, so it's kind of been something that's been on our radar. And in fact, and this is going to be shocking to you and others, we've actually been predicting something quite a bit worse than what we're experiencing now. Where whilst COVID-19 is really serious, and it's causing the devastation globally, you know, that we haven't seen for over 100 years, it could be worse. We could have a pathogen that is more infectious, and we could have one that's more deadly, and maybe one that, you know, affects younger people to a greater extent. So, yeah, there's the world is kind of set up for these pandemics to occur more often. And you know, it's something we're going to have to learn how to deal with. So we've got to make sure we learn all the lessons from this pandemic and be ready for the next one.
Wow, that is quite shocking.
Yeah, it's not a good story, but it's the reality of the world. And you know, there's things we can do if we there's a lot we have learned, and there's a lot we can learn from this pandemic, and there's a lot we can do to make it less likely that there is a pandemic. And you know, this is all speaks to the fact that the world is connected. So if we deal with issues of, you know, overpopulation and environmental sustainability and climate change, all these things contribute to the emergence of new pathogens, and new pathogens with with pandemic potential. So, you know, they're the things we know we've got to address anyway. And here's another reason to do it, to prevent pandemics.
Mm. I mean, where does this kind of visual communication come in terms of thinking about the future in a, I'm not going to say post-pandemic world now that you've said that, I'm going to say post-COVID-19 world, if we can get there. I mean, how can we be thinking about ways to improve our communication with graphics?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we have, I feel like the pandemic has obviously changed everything. And one of the things that's changed is the general public wanting data, and wanting data that they can access themselves and that they can interpret or have interpreted for them. And so there's been an amazing design and availability of these these websites where people have just collected all the data and created these interactive sites where people can put their own graphs together and create their own visualization. So, you know, I feel like people are going to have that expectation even more going forward. So even, you know, after the pandemic, I feel like people are going to expect to be able to have access to some of this health data so they can see for themselves what's happening. So, you know, I think the post-pandemic world, you know, should involve a lot more research into understanding what type of visualizations work best. I don't think there's a great body of science that has actually looked at, you know, especially when we're talking about risk communication, which types of visualization are easiest for people to interpret accurately, and, you know, which type of visualizations have the most impact in changing behavior. So I think there's a lot of work that, you know, needs to be done to sort of place us even better, you know, going future, just in health generally, as well as if there's another pandemic.
Mm. Oh, it sounds like a fantastic future grant project or something like that.
Yeah, so it might be a collaboration.
Yeah, well, true. Yeah. Hope anyone listening out there might fund it.
Yeah.
So I think those are all my questions, but was there anything else that you wanted to add about site and the pandemic?
I don't think so. I think we've pretty much covered it all, haven't we?
Yes, I mean, yes, in scary ways and in good, interesting ways.
I think it's a really interesting and important area. And I think if there's one thing that we've learnt through this pandemic, which I still think is hugely underappreciated, and that is the value of scientists communicating directly with the public. And I think the public do trust scientists as a general rule. So the more we can get out there and communicate directly with the public, the better. And I think it's part of our role as you know, university employees that are funded by the taxpayer. We have to contribute to communicating what we're doing directly with the public.
Fantastic. I feel like that's a great note to end on. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for the invitation. It was my pleasure.